What do you do? Welcome back to Agitator, the only freestyle storytelling mystic weed podcast taking place in a hotel in San Antonio. I got a guest star today, Mr. Michael Tisci, author. What else do you want to call yourself?
I don't know. I guess I'm a psychiatric professional. So
a psychiatric
professional. If that counts.
Dr. Michael Tisci on the show today. How's it been going at the... How's it been going with the festival? We're here at Ghoulish Fest.
Yeah, this has been a remarkable con. Like, you know, the vibe is, like, super chill. But, like, as important, if not more important, the money has been free-flowing. And I'm selling more shit than I've sold anywhere ever. So that's pretty fucking rad.
Big shouts out Max and Lori running around that promo. Everywhere we've gone, I think. I've seen Ghoulish Fest posted up.
Yeah, yeah, so they fucking saturated the area.
Shit works. Anybody promoting any kind of shit, just know you run around your hometown with the flyers and everything. Just post that shit up anywhere they'll let you. I think you said a couple people were like, no, fuck off. But, I mean, a couple people out of every single business I've walked into, I'm seeing the shit, so...
Yeah, now that I know how cheap those, like, you know, 4x6 or 3x5 cards are on Vistaprint, there is no excuse not to make a shit ton of those and distribute them broadly.
If you spend $100, you have a fuckload of promotional flyers and shit. If you just drop one hundo, you can just cover the city in that shit. Yeah, no, we've been selling like fucking animals. It's been great. I'm glad Winnowing Jaw is getting out there, because after just reading it, I'm like, this shit slaps.
Thank you.
Talk a little bit about your book.
So, the Winnowing Jaw is a, like, kind of, I guess, literary horror western. You know, I know that word literary is kind of a, like, sting to some people, but I don't know, it's like shorthand, like, you know, it's very, obviously, like, there's some big ideas, like, a lot of, like, metaphor at work in there, but ultimately, you know, it's a story about the American West, and an alternative history of the U.S. where all of the cryptids exist. And, you know, this colonel has been tasked with, like, freeing the United States of all of these animals to open the road up for conquest and, you know, like, the path of manifest destiny. That's just one storyline. There's, like, intersecting storylines in the book, obviously. The main character of the book is this kid who accidentally kills his best friend. He's on the run from this... kind of psychopathic bounty hunter.
That's my favorite dude.
Yeah, everybody likes the introduction to Charlie the Gentleman.
I really fuck with Audie's introduction. Or you do really well with introductions in general. So like the first, when we're first getting introduced to this kind of, this trio, there's more characters too that constantly, like Girl with Flowers for Hair.
Flowers for Hair.
Flowers for Hair. I just added the girl with the thing.
Well, she is a girl with flowers.
She is a girl. She's a girl with flowers for hair. And that's her name. But the, like, Cecil, Audie, and the, I'm blanking on his name, the psychopath.
Charlie.
Yeah. Those introduction chapters are so good. I was like, you know, like, the whole Broken River crew is big on opening bars. It's always like, you pick up so many books that might get good. But they start off with, like, Charlie woke up and pressed the button on his Keurig to warm it up before kissing his wife and stumbling to the bathroom. It's like, where's your opening bar, bro? Like, get me into this shit.
Man. Yeah, I'm, like, really conscious of that, too. That you want some kind of grabbers, like, something dynamic, not, like, some static description to open up a chapter or, like, introduce a character. I'm big on momentum, so.
It already feels lived into whenever... you just drop in the middle of something and keep going, and it's up to the reader to catch up with what is happening. And you're getting, I never got lost in your shit, but I always felt like I was in the middle of it.
Yeah, I'm big on, like, kind of lore as, like, incidental. Like, I don't like to just info dump on people, because, like, I'm bored as shit by that stuff when I read it in a book. And you know, you provide enough of a framework, and some of that stuff people are going to kind of build themselves. Like, I don't care if, like, somebody's idea of my world is slightly different than the one I'm depicting, if it's like their idea of it is the one they want to live in, so for for a little while. So, yeah, like, it's, you can get really bogged down in that stuff, and ultimately, like, you know, I think the best way to deliver it is through, like, through the action of the book. You know, you're writing from the perspective of characters who live in that world, so they take a lot of this stuff for granted. I mean, I would say, you know, Cecil is our one character who's, like, fairly wide-eyed and naive going into things, so, like, you know, that's the opportunity to give the perspective of, you know, of someone for whom all of this stuff is new.
I love the sort of reversal of the whole trope of, like, the angry, closeted homosexual who usually commits some kind of act. Instead, it's like the angry, closeted homosexual gets thrown to his death.
Well, I mean, to be fair, like, you know, they're young, and they're both, like, kind of angry, closeted homosexuals, so one gets thrown to his death, and one, like, you know, is the offender and haunted by it, so it's, yeah, it's, you know, and I also, like, I hate coming-of-age stories for the most part, you know, like, the classic trope that, you know, the hero's journey, like, someone's coming up, they encounter, like, whatever the like, barrier is, or something that they need to overcome, and they're going to become a complete and, like, you know, better person as a result of it. And so I had a conversation, like, a long time ago with, like, Joe Koch about this, that I was like, I really want to write, like, the anti-Bildungsroman. And I realized halfway through writing this book that I was just like, oh shit, I'm, like, accidentally doing that, because, like, it is, yeah, I feel like, you know, for me, it's more real, like a lot of the stuff, you know, I mean, even the stuff that you overcome, I mean, it can leave you scarred up. Like, it's not necessarily, like, I mean, if you become a better person through the trials and tribulations of your life, that's, like, that's through a process of, like, really fighting for that, you know? And it's not something that just, like, accidentally happens because, you know, I fucking, like, conquered the Minotaur, you know? So...
Right. Where... How'd the idea start? Because this is a lot of, there's a lot going on in the book. Not just with the different, like, character arcs and the different, like, little subplots, but with what it's doing. There's so much that it's doing. There's the cryptid shit, there's the, all the different characters and their situations. There's the whole psychology of it. There's reframing the Old West myth. There's... Where was your starting point? Like, was there a moment that was like, this is what I'm trying to write, and everything got added on?
It's really weird, actually. So, like, at the very first AuthorCon, which will be, like, 2 years ago this April, you know, I was, like, I checked into my room, and I was all fucked up there. I was recovering from knee surgery, so I was pretty much stuck. Like, you know, people could visit me, but I was, like, really limiting, like, my action on the floor. And I was just sitting in my room, and this scene just kind of popped into my head. And the scene's not actually in the book. Like, I mean, it's similar. The vibe of it is there. But I wrote this scene where, like, Cecil is staring out at the Pacific Ocean and, like, is just, like, reflecting on, like, just, you know, like the horrors and how kind of beyond understanding his experiences to, like, he's being talked to by this younger, like, native Californian, basically, like, someone who hasn't walked across the United States like he has, and it's just this, like, sense of being haunted and broken by, like, the things that he's been through, and that, like, nobody who hasn't can, like, remotely understand that. And then, like, so that was, like, the seed, and I had no intention of writing a Western, like, when that first popped into my head, like, you know, it was, like, things were first popping off, like, you're hearing about, like splatter westerns, and I never, like, chase trends like that, you know, I just can't, like, I mean, especially with a project of that magnitude, like, you've really got to want it.
You're already at the point of, like, you have to really want to write it, so, or you end up writing it, and then there's a different trend by the time you're done.
Yeah, so, like, so that was it. It was, like, that scene that, you know, I ended up envisioning as, like, more or less, like, the close of the book. And then from there, you know, I had to, like, conceive of this character And then, like, you know, things just sort of popped off from there. I mean, a lot of it, too, was just doing, like, a crazy amount of research. So, like, just, you know, the more I kind of understood about, like actual Western history. And it so then, you know, characters get added in. And then before you know it, you've got, like, you know, a 300-plus page novel. So, but it was, like, weird, too, because, like, I'd never written a book of that length, you know, and certainly never done anything close to that amount of research. So there was a time where you're just, like, I was so, like, so entrenched in these characters. Like, it was very easy to, like, pop in and out of it because it was just, like, it was like I was living with all these people, you know? So... And even the like grotesque ones, you know, you appreciate something about them, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Like, they're like, so. They're like Audie. Like Charlie and Audie are like my favorite characters.
I love, and I mean, there's like side characters. Like, I really loved writing Mabel. Like and Mabel is, by like an objective standard, like, she is like the worst kind of fucking mother. Like, I mean, she really is. Like, you know, if you look at like everything Charlie is, then like Mabel has a part of that, and she's also like benefiting from his ongoing, like, you know, like the ongoing murder that he's doing.
Also, but kind of am jealous of his job. He just gets to be a fucking psychopath, and they let him, and they're like, "Here's money for it."
Yeah.
God damn, dog.
Oh man.
Like, yeah. Hitman for the fucking government.
And I love that, you know, like Mae Murray did the, like, it was my sensitivity reader, which I felt like I needed to do because there was so much, like, native stuff in there. I didn't want to, like, accidentally, like, really step on something.
I'm surprised, it surprised me that you had, when I saw you had a sensitivity reader, I was like, what? And then, after reading the book, I was like, because sensitivity readers, to me, are always such a red flag that this book is going to suck. I think it just, I don't mean to interrupt you, you finished, but I think, like, it, everything that you did seemed to contribute to making it an authentic, lived-in type of world.
Yeah, Mae was really supportive, like, and, you know, I mean, she just had some pointers that were just, like, blind spots that if you don't, like, if you're not, like, culturally, like, connected to Native Americans, then, like, you wouldn't, that you just overlooked. They were all, like, very subtle changes. There weren't, like, huge material changes that were, like, no, this is horribly offensive or anything like that, you know? So I think actually, like, working with her...
Flowers with Hair is not a real name.
Yeah. But no, it was really useful, because a lot of it was just stuff, like, when I'm describing, like, the Lakota band that she was a part of, you know, Mae was like, it's really important, like, to, you know, that, like, these, like, tribe names in the States are not, it's not a monolithic thing, like, so someone might, like, consider themselves Lakota, but they're going to consider themselves, like, you know, all the way down the line, like, the way I describe her when she introduces herself in terms of her family name and all of that. So just, like, little tweaks like that that I think, like, ultimately made the book better, but... Yeah, it was, I don't know. I can see what you're saying, too. Like, sometimes, you know, I'm, like, I'm cautious about that, but, like...
Well, see, you explaining that, like, that's not what I would call a sensitivity reader. That's just, like, gathering the research from somebody who knows. Like, the shit that, like, Simmons, even being Jewish, there's a lot of shit he does, there's a lot of Jewish shit he don't fuck with.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, him going to, like, rabbis and shit and being, like... You know, walk me through some of this shit. I want to know about this and that, and like sort of the mystic side of this, or like the organizational side of this, the ritual side of it, like, you know.
Yeah.
And getting all of that shit to where you do it right just makes the book better.
Like, yeah.
Anything in service of the book, basically.
Yeah, and Mae thought Charlie was hilarious because he's like, you know, essentially a metrosexual assassin living in the old West, and he like fucking hates the West. Like he resents that he has to be there. He's like the one person who like is sensitive to the draw, but is like, fuck that, because by nature he's just oppositional to anything that's trying to influence him one way or another. So it's fucking hilarious.
Well, I'm curious where your influences come from, because. So much modern literature that I try to pick up, I don't read a lot of modern literature because I feel like people are trying to pitch it as a movie
Mm-hmm.
And so the writing style almost has a very, like, I'm trying to make you envision this instead. I'm not, there's no, like, auditory shit or smells or telling, which I emphasize. Like, you can tell things. Like, fuck that show, don't tell shit. Like, you can tell things. I'm curious your influences, because you just, I mean, you don't have any of those hangups. You have, like, you have the whole, there's the unlimited budget thing, which I always sound like, books have an unlimited budget. You can do whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah.
You go nuts. I mean, shit goes nuts. And you do some of that telling. You do, you have, the prose is, there's a style to it. It's not just like, I'm trying to make sure you can envision this so that this can get picked up for a film option or whatever. So, like, who are, like, where did your influences come from?
Well, I'll start with the obvious, with the Western ones, because this is a Western, like, Cormac McCarthy, you know, and on selling the book, I'm just like, Blood Meridian meets, you know, what would we see him? Blood Meridian by way of H.P. Lovecraft.
Yeah,
how we've been pitching it at the con. But that's just because Blood Meridian is, like, the recognizable title. Like, taken as, like, a single book, like, my favorite piece of literature of all time is the Border Trilogy by Cormac McCarthy, and The Crossing is my favorite of the three books. And so, and I would say that's, like, definitely a closer comp, but, like, nobody, like, most people you're talking to don't know what the fuck The Crossing is.
Right.
So that and Larry McMurtry, you know, I think, like, McMurtry's a little less stylized, and so, like, I think, you know, in terms of, like, some of my beats and stuff, I definitely, you know, like picked up from him. There's, like, a part in, like, one of the Lonesome Dove books where, like, someone is telling a story, and then, like, he's so perfectly transitions from the telling of the story into, like, the event itself, and, like, I totally ripped that off. I was just like, you know, as a technique, I'm just like, man, that is fuck. I reread the section like 3 times. I was just like, it's so fluid that you're just like, you transition from, like, a retelling of something to the actual event, and I'm just like, that's fucking great. But I would say, like, in terms of modern writers, you know, Dennis Johnson's a huge influence on me, and Annie Proulx. Like, Annie Proulx is, like, you know, like, her style has been described as ambiguous realism, which I've totally copped that, like, term, because, you know, like, magical realism is by definition, like, you know, there's something supernatural in the, like, one supernatural element or something in, like, an otherwise normal world that everyone's aware of. You know, to me, like, what ambiguous realism means to me is that, like, not necessarily everyone's aware of it. And it may or may not be, like supernatural. Mm-hmm. Like, I like playing with that. And I think, you know, I think, you know, Dennis Johnson doesn't really have that label, but I think a lot of his stuff kind of fits the bill, because there is some, like an Already Dead, like, he kind of fucks with the supernatural, but, like, it's unclear, like, you know, whether it's real or just someone's perception, you know? So, Otessa Moshfegh, I love, know? I kind of, like, split my time between, like, reading more, like, horror stuff and reading more, like, I guess what's considered, like, lit fic, like, typically. So, yeah.
I could actually see a smidge, like a peppering of Moshfegh influence, now that you say that. Like,
we were talking
about Moshfegh before just being fans, but, adding her in the influences thing, I can, not in the writing style at all, but in the, I don't know, kind of a little bit of the beats, the rhythm of how you get from this place to that place and how much is incorporated in the middle of that, just in, within, like, interiority being described, but in a very, like, digestible, beautiful, and, interesting way, versus just like he's info dumping or whatever.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, like, you know, Moshfegh, like if any, my primary takeaway from Moshfegh is, like, just writing, like, ugly, like, grimy ass characters,
yeah,
in a way that, like, that they're, you know, that it kind of forces you to turn the mirror on yourself. You know, it's just like they're identifiable and you wish that they weren't, you know, and that's,
yeah,
kind of,
yeah,
and I fuck with that for sure. Like, you know, that's like I just a straight up villain is not like a particularly interesting character to me, but a character whose like motivations, like, you know, you can kind of relate to, even though, like, you know, it's like, it's forcing you to confront, like, you know, some darker impulses.
It is, I think, the motivation that does that, because if you can relate to a person's why, then you can start to at least understand where they're coming from with what they're doing, and you already relate to the motive.
Yeah.
That you go, wait, would I do this? Like, you'd be like relating to overly abusive fathers, you'd be relating to like fucking idiots and shit, and you're just like, how'd you do this? Like, why do I fuck with this character so hard? Speaking of ambiguous surrealism, we're also going to talk A Record of Sweet Murder.
Yes!
Perfect segue. I would not call that ambiguous surrealism.
Well, it's ambiguous right up until like the last five minutes.
Until it's not. It is. It actually, yes, it is. It might be even the definition of ambiguous realism until the end, when the whole mystery of it, the whole tension of it. And I don't give a shit about spoilers, but I want people to actually check this out.
Oh, yeah.
I've been like, this is one of my favorite movies now that you told me to watch this shit. I was like, oh my god, I'm so, like, the payoff was so fucking great.
Oh, yeah.
It's just this one shot, one location, shot on video, found footage, serial killer, demented serial killer story.
I feel like, you know, because like, I watched Cult right before I watched this, which is also, they're the same director, Shiriyashi, so Japanese horror. These were both from, like, I think the early 2000s, maybe, I don't know, it might be as late as, like, 2010 or something like that. But they're a little older. If you like Noroi, it's the same director. Noroi came earlier than either of these two. Shiriyashi, like, does a ton of found footage. But one of the things I really like is that Shiriyashi, like, either assumes that you're familiar with, like, his body of work, or he just doesn't give a fuck. Because, like, you know, like, if you watch Cult before you watch A Record of Sweet Murder, I think it's a good setup, because it gives you a sense of, like, kind of the universe in which his stories exist. Because, of, like, if, when you watch A Record of Sweet Murder as a standalone, it's just, like, he gives you, like, one, like, tiny glimpse of that, and it's just like, if you don't know what the reference point of it is, it's just like a what the fuck moment, like, you know. So it's like, but I think he's just like, whatever, he's like, either, you know. And like, I mean, in Japan he's done so much stuff. He's done that like series of like supernatural investigation like stories that are just impossible to find. So if any agitator listeners, like, you know, of these and want to churn out some fucking bootlegs and send them my way, I'm a happy recipient. Yeah. But I have yet to be able to find that shit.
Shouts out. That was, we had that once. We had somebody send us each a Blu-ray of Agitator, their own extended cut, beautifully remastered, like steel case Agitator.
Oh shit!
It's like, what the fuck. And he doesn't want me to say his name, because he was like, I don't want to do this shit. Like, I just wanted y'all to have this.
Yeah,
he was like,
this awesome, is though.
So much work. I was like, holy shit. Yeah, I can see this is so much work. Also, we're going to hire you and hit you up whenever we get into distribution.
But, like, one of the things I like about Shiriyashi, you know, and I think that Japanese horror often does well, and it's like, we were talking about, like, the other day, like, it's one of the things I like about, like, kind of French and Belgian extreme horror as well, is, you know, there's like, the darkest shit can have some kind of weird fucking whimsical thing in it, and you're just like, it's just like a what the fuck thing that just makes the horror so much worse, because it's just like that brief, like, humorous. And Shiriyashi oftentimes has a character that in a movie that's, you know, it's like the tinfoil hat guy in Noroi. In Cult, it's like the demon hunter. And Record of Sweet Murder, it's the Japanese dude both of them, really. The Japanese are fucking great.
That's my favorite part of looking back, that's my favorite part of the movie. In the moment, my favorite part was when we get to the, because there's so much tension about how is this going to end? Like, where is this going? who's telling the truth, how much of this is like, and then the payoff of it, I was like, yes, fuck yes. And then, but now that I know how it all plays out, like, the Japanese couple is just my favorite part.
I just love that the dude, okay, so the killer guy doesn't speak Japanese, so, like, the cameraman has to translate, and, like, the killer guy knows that, like, whatever the Japanese guy is saying is not fucking good, just because of his tone, uh-huh. But you can see, like, the cameraman kind of struggling with it, like, what am I gonna reveal, yeah. Like...
What is he saying? He's making fun of you.
Oh, shit, yeah.
And a lot, so the whole setup is like this dude. Oh, the setup is so genius. Inspired by the movie It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah.
The American. Are you familiar with the American classic It's a Wonderful Life? But he is influenced by It's a Wonderful Life to capture a miracle on screen.
Oh yeah.
So that's why he needed the cameraman.
Yeah.
There's no other reason to have this filmed. He could have. Yeah. Fulfilled his prophecy, like the God is telling him that he has to kill 27 yeah. people in order to bring back a friend of theirs who died.
Oh, and this is that, by the way, this is not a spoiler. Like the opening scene of the movie is like the woman who's like a childhood friend who he's contacted to like to document what he's doing, like is aware that he is on the run from a mental asylum having killed like 25 people already. So
well, doesn't she think she thinks like 18 or something?
Okay, he's, that's right. He's just like, oh no, there were a few like, more.
I guess the bodies haven't turned up. I killed 25
people. A couple didn't count because like I kind of fucked that up. Like I didn't read things right.
So you get all of these elements to it where you're like, what the fuck? He's not even fulfilling the prophecy correctly. So you're not even like, yeah. You're not even sure if he is for real, if God is like, do this. It's like, are you even doing it correctly? You've already killed too many people. like this math well, ain't adding up.
And the childhood friend is just like, you know, her first thought is just like, well, there's two of us. Is this why you want yeah, the cameraman?
Yeah. He's like, I'm not going to kill you. And you do think like, oh my God, he's so fucking good at introducing tension because there's that tension too. You're like, I mean, I get he's telling her, no, that's not why I brought you yeah. here. He could be full of shit.
Oh, like, he's saying, I don't want to kill you, but he's getting between them and the door and, like, waving a knife around menacingly on yeah. a regular basis.
And does he... she gets stabbed several times. Is he ever one of the ones who stabs her?
I guess, but not... I mean, only when... I guess when she asks him to at that point. But, like, he's not... He doesn't attack her.
Right.
She
does get pretty fucked up.
I mean, everybody, it's and what's crazy is like, you know, 99% of the movie is like essentially like a closed door, like mystery, basically, like, you know, like we're seeing events unfold and we're, you know, ultimately like there's the core of it is this mystery of, you know, is it real? Is it not real? But it's amazing to me that like, you know, I mean, I can't imagine the budget for this was very big. Like it's shot like almost entirely inside this apartment.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's like the very beginning and the very end are the only parts that take place outside of that. So,
and when they do take place outside, it's right outside yeah, the yeah. apartment, or it's on the roof of the
yeah.
apartment.
Yeah, everything was shot within like 100 feet.
Like, it's like most of these locations, yeah, it is like, oh, you don't need a permit for that. You don't need it. And if this was a legit abandoned apartment, like, maybe they didn't.
That's even, and it know. Legitimately looks like that. Like it is. There is no one around. There's fucking trash piled up outside of the place. Like,
it's honestly, it was either cheap. It was either like free because this is how this place was, or it was expensive as shit because it's not how this place yeah. was. And they had to like, which I don't think they'd have gone through all of that work unless I don't know. Now I want to know, because if he did, he's a fucking psychopath. It's trying to make this like this is my $20 million movie. Like, what the fuck? So the other impressive thing is like how and camera gimmicks don't really. I appreciate good looking shit. I mean, I think that's the main point of film is a you know auditory for sure. You having an auditory experience, but. It's on film, it's a visual experience.
Yeah.
So obviously I appreciate and I mostly care about if I'm watching something, I care about how it looks. But how impressive. I think the whole one-shot gimmick kind of got played out past, like, Irreversible made those, like, did those cheats of, like, this isn't really, it's a lot of lingering shots. This isn't really a one shot. It constantly cuts to, like, a wall and does this, like, swirling, you just watched your first Gaspar Noé, so yeah. You haven't seen, so in Irreversible, he has this kind of thing where it's, like, it's a story told in reverse, and in these, like, sort of fluid lingering shots, the camera kind of spins around. Okay. And it kind of, so it's like this dizzying effect that allows for a cut to somewhere else, but making it feel like it just keeps going. But so there's a lot of shit that does that, or they digitally cut, like they make it seem, I think 1917 was like a quote unquote yeah. one shot that's not really a one shot. But this being a legit one shot for the majority, like 99% of the movie, mm-hmm. was so fucking impressive, not just on the actor's ability to keep with the whole thing. Like, there's so much, like, it's kind of simple when you break it down, the premise of it, but just in having that much dialogue and shit and yeah. back and forth and being able to keep following the emotional currents and the blood. When the more gory it got, that's when it took me out of the movie in a good way, in a way that made me go, oh shit, yeah, I'm watching a movie. I'm not as immersed in it because I snapped and I went, how did they do that? Yeah. And I was like impressed. It took me out of the movie, but in a good way, because I was impressed. I was like, how the fuck are they doing this? This yeah. is a one shot and this is getting gory as shit.
Yeah, and it's a one shot in an enclosed space that they managed, like, that you never, like, that it's, I mean, it's subtly lit, but it's well lit. Like, you mm-hmm. know, you're in a dark apartment, but there's no point where, like, just, like, everything's washed out and you can't see anything. So somewhere around here, there's an entire crew that you never get a glimpse of, in spite of the fact that the camera is all over the fucking place.
Yes. Yeah.
Like,
going all over the room. No, it's fucking, I didn't even think about the lighting and shit. Because that's right. Even if they, like, you get the illusion that all the light's coming through the windows. Yeah. Because it's bright outside, and that's another thing, being like a bright midday horror movie was like, I like that shit. I like when you can see the horror, yeah. and it's not just like, oh, it's dark and spooky. But no, I didn't even think of that. There's no way that, like, having filmed shit, like, there's no way all that light was coming from those windows.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, it's a really good, like, subtle lighting job, but damn. Yeah.
The choreography of everybody, being able, knowing where they can move around and when they have to. And the Japanese couple. So he's been told by God that there will be this Japanese couple who loves each other. You have to kill somebody who... Or you have to kill a couple who love each other. And the brilliant twist of this is this couple who loves each other are like natural born killers. Yes. They're like fucking psychopaths.
Oh, that's fucking awesome. Like, yeah, it's like that whole, like, how all of that plays out is just so fucking, like, hilarious and fucked up. Like, just a dude.
When he's like,
I've killed more people than you have.
I've killed more people than you have. And he's scared of you, bitch. And then he's like, I'm gonna rape your girl. He's like, good. This is a miracle. This is a fantasy of ours. Like, what the fuck? So it just goes. And he's somebody who doesn't want to do that. He's saying, like, I don't want to kill all these people, but God told me I have to. It's the only way to bring her back. And then he even lets himself off the hook morally even more, because he's like, and God will bring back the people I killed too. So it's fine. It will be okay. And, the Japanese couple is just like, oh, this is a fantasy of ours. This is great. And he's like, shit, these people are crazy.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, that dude, it's so great. Like, you know, he's just like, just tearing the dude up. He's just like, you've never seen a naked girl before, have you? Like, you fucking limp dick piece of shit. Like,
he's like, you don't know what to do with it. He's like, I know what to do, rips her shirt open, and is like awkwardly juggling.
Yeah, it's like everything he does is so awkward.
He's just like, just jiggling her titty. It's
like a fucking, yeah, it's like, you know, checking, like, you're like, how far do I have to take this before you'll hang yourself like I told you to? And the guy's just like,
keep going, fuck her, if you can, please. Oh, yeah. No, 10 out of 10.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a high recommendation for me. Yeah, we're really good at covering shit. I don't know. Like, we're making fucking great time, I think. Fucking 35 minutes. That's how I felt with, like, the panel last night, running. I was being responsible. I took it as a challenge that I was going to accept. I was like, you know, Max put it on. He was like, let people out of here on time. I was like, don't worry, I'll be responsible, you know, challenge accepted. I'm irresponsible. No. I'm gonna be the adult with this. And so I was paying attention to the time and everything. And about 45 minutes in, I opened it up for questions so we could get through those. Nobody had any questions. And I was like, damn, either I'm good or y'all suck.
I mean, it was very thorough. Like, you know, like you, I think you asked the panel like twice as many questions as Preston asked our panel in the morning. So I think like they covered so much ground and it was like a good collection of people with like different perspectives, different approaches. So I think it was just like, you know, like, I think everybody came like, you know, like I mean, I came out of support and like, you know, I'm like, yeah, I'm sure it'll be interesting, but I like, you know, I pulled some stuff out of that, like that I, you know, I think is going to be useful to me. So I'm guessing like pretty much everybody there was in the same boat. So
it was real. I took some shit too. It was real interesting hearing the like, people just have, it was refreshing. Everybody on the panel kind of had the same attitude of, don't do what doesn't work for you.
Yeah.
Like don't, and but you don't know what will work for you, so you kind of have to experiment and find out. Like, be open to anything, but also shut the door if it's like that. Like TikTok is not, there's no return on investment for me. I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
Or Amazon ads and didn't work out, I'm not doing that. But I'll do this other thing. And somebody else is like, that never worked for me. They're like, well, then don't do it. That's what I do. Any final thoughts on anything, I guess?
I don't know. We've covered a lot of ground. I mean, it's been awesome hanging out. Yeah, check out the Winnowing Draw. It's available Castain Publishing website. You know, it's available on Amazon. But, you know, if you buy it from Castain Publishing, like, more money goes to cool people. So there's that.
Yeah. We'll find out if Amazon is just hating on me or if they're being shady with a lot of people's royalties. Now I'm like, kind of like, I used to be on some, just get it on Amazon, whatever, you know, it's the easiest way. I do get a cut from, I mean, you know, it is what it is. And now I'm like, they've been 3 months out from sending me some money that they owe me. So I'm kind of like, oh, fuck Amazon, don't buy from Amazon.
Man, yeah, good thing you weren't counting on that to fucking pay the rent or something, you know? Like, it's just like, that's, you know, it's just weird. Like, yeah, like we were talking, I mean, like, relatedly, but different. Like, you know, people with money are never in a hurry to pay anyone, like.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, that's the truth. So go get the Winnowing Draw from my full cosign, also a 10 of 10, banger. Especially, I know a lot of Agitator hardcore listeners, they've been up in the Discord, they've been like on a McMurtry and a McCarthy kick. So everybody who's just been reading Lonesome Dove or has just been reading, I don't think a lot of, whatever y'all been reading of McCarthy, I know y'all been reading McCarthy, go and pick up The Winnowing Draw. The paperback is beautiful too. It's a really, really good looking book.
Thank you. Yeah, it's Carrie St. Laurent. Check out her art. Like, she does some really cool shit.
Hell yeah. All right, and that's it.